The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
All right, welcome back. It's Thursday, and the second Thursday of the month means it's Admiral Cooper Night, third Thursday of the month. Depends on the month. This month there are five, count them, five Thursdays, because it's a leap month of a leap year. In other words, we have 29 days in February. Lots going on around the world, as you all know. We're going to take another welcome respite from that in these first 2 hours with Harry Cooper and talk about something that is really, it's hard to imagine a dream coming true. Now, we'll get into this in some fashion here and then later on in great detail. But we have wanted and hoped for a long time that the Hitler estate, we'll call it, I think it's 2,700 acres, something like that, his home for perhaps the longest period in his life, other than his childhood home, 10 years in Patagonia in southern Argentina, was going to be torn down. The home was just decaying. It was a magnificent Bavarian-style structure, as many of you know. If you don't know, we're going to show you lots of pictures of it. And I think what I'll do is just mention briefly that Harry has been there a number of times. We have done a number of programs on the house. It went from, and I think it was 2008 when Harry was there first. We'll find out for sure in just a moment. But it had all what appeared to be original furniture in it. I mean, when you leave a place like that, you don't, it was so remote, there were no roads there to speak of. You didn't just drive down a highway and with a Beacon's van. You didn't do that. The furniture in the house was handmade by local craftsmen and artisans, a little village nearby. It was probably almost complete. Most all the furniture was left, the bigger stuff, and it was spectacular. And that's all gone now, but gone in a sense that it went to a good, safe place. We'll talk about that a bit as well. So there's a lot going on in Argentina, but most of all, let me start with the incredible economic news out of Argentina. The annual inflation rate in that once beautiful country called the Europe of the South or something like that, but Harry knows.
Paris of the South,
that's Buenos Aires. The annual inflation rate in Argentina hit a 30-year high of 254% last month, two weeks ago. Even as the rate slowed down slightly in monthly terms, according to official data. Now, that's an inflation rate of 254% per year. Newly installed President Javier Milei, has subjected the country to shock therapy in and amongst his reforms aimed at stabilizing the ailing economy, including devaluing the nation's currency by 50% against the U.S. dollar and hiking the key interest rate to 133%. So he's trying to basically make the dollar the national currency of Argentina by devaluing the local currency by 50%. It's an extraordinary shakeup, to put it mildly, but it is a wonderful country full of tremendous potential. It did have at one point the worldwide reputation of being just a glorious place to go. And maybe one day that'll happen again. So let's, with that, welcome back Admiral Cooper, who is standing by, or sitting by, hopefully, somewhere in the wilds of Florida. Are you there, Harry?
You betcha. I'm sitting in the wilds of Florida here in Hillbilly Heaven, in the woods where our house is.
And Bigfoot.
I saw the picture somebody took of my back deck, and there was Bigfoot.
I sent you that picture.
I know you did.
And
three
I don't
pictures
want you
of
to,
Bigfoot.
I don't want you to worry, but there are friends out there in the woods.
Okay. Well, as long as he stays a friend. Remember, Florida is called the Gunshine State.
Yeah, I know. Well,
we're all heavily armed.
Well, you saw that he, on his shirt there was a German Iron Cross, so don't worry. He's a good guy.
Okay.
Good guy.
Okay, we'll get him a uniform and send him back into battle.
He's a big good guy.
Big,
all right,
good guy.
For God's sakes, 254% inflation in January. I don't see how
any country could survive that. That's just incredible. That's worse than Jimmy Carter did to us.
Oh, yes. Yes. How? All right. What he's doing, he's kind of like a Trump, Southern Hemisphere Trump, all right, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Argentina's Donald Trump. But he's doing much more radical things than Trump ever did here. He's
actually doing things.
Yes.
He has
country's
to. The
dying.
Country's in terrible shape financially.
Yeah. He's making the dollar basically the standard currency for Argentina. That's not a trend you see anywhere else in the world. It's the opposite.
Right.
So he's a real character. Is it pronounced Milei? Milei? I don't know how
it's
pronounced.
I'm not sure. I get emails back and forth, but you don't have pronunciation from an email.
He used to be a rock musician.
Why not? Zelensky used to be a comic.
Well, he still is a faggot.
I know it.
So, all right.
Playing the piano with his weenie.
Let's not.
But no, Melee's he's got a drop dead gorgeous girlfriend, and every once in a while he gets up on stage while she's performing and gives her a great big romantic kiss. You can't fault a guy like that.
No, that's kind of the ethos of romanticism and Latin countries, mm-hmm. right?
And the government people I've met down there, they all think Donald Trump is the greatest president ever, and they're right. He was, and really still is, if it hadn't been, never mind, don't go there, but they all emulate Trump, so, and much as people like to make funny remarks about Putin, he's Russia's version of Donald Trump. He's just a hardcore Russian patriot. Milei is a hardcore Argentine patriot.
Greatest living statesman in the world, Vladimir Putin. Tucker Carlson did three really good shorts. They're up. I think they're up in news right now. They're called TC Shorts, for Tucker Carlson Shorts. One of them, he went into the subway in Moscow to show what it was like. God, you could eat dinner off the floor. It was so immaculate.
I've been in those subways. Every subway station is like a mini museum.
Yeah, beautiful, gorgeous.
And when
gorgeous
you're going
stuff.
Down the escalator, you're going down the escalator. You go about a quarter of a mile down into the earth, and it's a very steep escalator. And like I say, they've got paintings and statues in all of these subway stations. Beautiful country.
Well, yes, and one of the other shorts he did, about 2.5 minute video. He and his crew, they were there for a week to do the interview with Putin. They went into a Moscow supermarket to buy food for the week. Mm-hmm. And they all bought whatever they did. They didn't pay attention to the price. They bought what they thought that they would need to get through a week. And mm-hmm. it shows him at the checkout. And the market is beautiful, gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And it's not a high-end market. It's just a normal, typical Moscow Russian supermarket. All right? Mm-hmm. It looks like what ours might have looked like once. It's beautiful. Anyway, they checked out, and he said that they got together, and they all guessed what the bill would be, and they all guessed, I think, north of $400 somewhere.
Ooh.
For the bill. Well, according to what they're used to in America, with our prices, mm-hmm. $15 a dozen eggs now in some places, $5 for a loaf of bread. All right, anyway, they all guessed over
$400. I bought a quart of milk yesterday. It was $5.
That's my point.
Yep.
So they all got together, and the bill for everything they bought was $103 and change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, they don't have Bidenomics working.
No. No. So take a look at those shorts, and don't buy into this hate Russia stuff. I know most of you would never, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. It's all a fiction. It's a vile, rotten, psyop fiction created by the leftist communists in this country. Speaking of Argentina, though, I'm going to go back there just for a little bit. And our friend Martin sent, it's been several years now, several newspaper articles about what was going on in the south of Argentina in Patagonia. There were a lot of communist demonstrations down there. Burning of buildings. They had a problem. Argentina was facing the same sort of thing we are facing now, and that's why Milei was elected, to get rid of this problem and take care of these creeps. Anyway, some of those buildings that were burned were historic buildings, and we were afraid at one point that they might burn Inalco. It was that bad.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
Things have stabilized down there now. And God bless him and good luck to him. I hope he can pull it off. And if the people are behind him, they'll tolerate 253%, 54%, if the results are worthy. So let's find out.
Well, they got to get the inflation down to something manageable. It seems like
they will.
A massive mountain to climb, but they got to get back down to 3-4% inflation, which is,
right,
you know, handleable.
They'll do it. I think if the if the people support Milei and the government, they'll get there. It'll take time, but the sacrifice will be well worth it. They were headed into a total Bolshevism there. The country was going communist and down into the sewer.
Yep.
So, in short, what we're going to do tonight is take all of you on a walk through Hitler's home in remote Patagonia on an enormous lake, Lake Nahuapi, and a huge, beautiful lake at the base of the Andes Mountains, which looks very much like the Bavarian Alps, except it's in the southern hemisphere. And that's where Hitler lived for 10 years. That estate was apparently picked up and completely fabricated to be a home, a self-sufficient home, out in the middle of, the only way you could get there was across this enormous lake. And it was well guarded 24 hours a day. You know the basic story, or you wouldn't be part of our family here, but we're going to take you through this again tonight and then spring the really good news on a little bit later. We want to build a little drama here, but our hope was that maybe one of us would actually buy a lottery ticket and win, and we could have bought the entire estate. It was for sale somewhere in the $20 million range, a little bit more than 20, but it was for sale. And there were people apparently involved in buying it that would not necessarily be the cause of happiness on our part. We were worried that the people who were going to buy it were going to tear everything down and build a big hotel there. All right, but we have, I just, like, We'll tell you later, so just hang in there. All right. What have you been doing?
It's been just so incredibly busy. I've gotten involved in local politics. I've been going to political meetings, and then yesterday I was at the Writers Club meeting, and then we got the bad news. Our travel trailer was in for repair, and I got the bad news that it's dead. So the insurance company's going to have to write it off. This morning I was on the radio with Shannon Davis. Tonight I'm on the radio with you. Monday there's a big Republican meeting in the next town over, Ocala. And what's his name? Tom Homan is going to be the speaker. And as soon as we get out of there, I got to drive 30 miles to my own Republican Executive Committee, of which I'm a member. And then maybe next week I can actually get back to work here writing books.
Oh, you'll get there.
Yeah.
You get there. You need.
That's why I put in 12 hours, 14 hours a day, every day.
Well, Harry and I do the same sort of thing. I'm always up at 4 a.m. when he's getting right back in gear and rolling along. So it's funny.
Yeah, and 2, 4 a.m. here is what? 1 a.m. out by you.
I work till 3:30 to 4 a.m. every night, 7 days
right,
a week.
Right, that's your time, which would be
that's
7
right.
in the morning my time, and I've already been, oh, my God, we got to find another way to live.
I know. Hey, I just
gave my word
idea.
To all those great veterans that I'd keep their history honest, and that's what I'm doing. As
well,
you know, nobody gets paid here at Shark Hunters. We're all volunteers, me too. And for the last 3 months, I have not had to take any money out of my personal retirement to put into Shark Hunters. So I think we're turning the corner a little bit from Bidenomics, please God.
Well, I have up on my homepage, which is worth 1.5 million views a month. We've got a big banner up there that leads to Harry's fabulous treasury of books. And I've got six or seven
book
covers.
I just saw that a little while ago. That's beautiful. You've done a super job, man. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to help, as always. I know. If you don't help your friends, what are you? Now, I have an idea.
Okay.
Some time ago... I know a lot of you know that in the U.S. and probably elsewhere, school buses are being picked up and converted into RVs. Okay?
Right.
You've seen this.
Yep.
Sure most of you have. Our local school district was selling off buses, and I got one really shockingly inexpensive. And it's a 2009. Thomas, which is the best body, and Mercedes diesel, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful bus. Seven
okay.
windows on each side. It's not too small. Five windows a bit small. Seven windows is perfect. 10 windows gets to be pretty big. So it's a perfect size, and I just had a thought. I haven't converted it yet. It's still got 30 seats in it or whatever, but why don't you work out a deal that I'll buy for pennies on the dollar your RV trailer, haul it out here, and take all of the kitchen and bathroom things out and use that for the bus, the counters, the fridge, everything. Because your RV is nice.
Yeah, it was. Well, it still is, but it
requires... just got a leak in the roof.
Yeah, and it... a lot of floor damage, et cetera. We never even knew it. It came through the walls. We never even realized there was a leak. I mean, it wasn't like there was dripping on our head or puddles on the floor. It just all of a sudden
the
bathroom
those seams
floor
go,
got spongy.
It sneaks in everywhere, and no, it's bad. I'm just interested in the cabinetry, the kitchen works, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a thought.
Okay,
I'd rather
we can
do
kick
that
though. Around later.
Yeah, send me some pictures. Maybe they'll just give it away, haul it away. Anyway, I'm only, 14,000 miles away from you, so what the hell?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, so there you go. You're all up to date on Harry's trailer crisis, but the good news is when he went to the writers' conference, he drove his Corvette.
That's true. That's true. I got it working. It's been sitting for a year, and she lit right off. Everything's fine. The only problem is I have to drive it like an old lady would be driving a Subaru, and everything's fine. But when I drive it like a former professional race car driver in a Corvette, the temperature gauge goes right to the peg, and it don't come down. So I have to put in a new radiator. But other than that, just... that's my Red Rocket. I bought it in the year 2000, right after my doctor called and said, hey, Mr. Cooper, your test came back and I was wrong. You don't have cancer after all. So I took my checkbook, told my wife I was going to get a haircut, and came home with a 1981 Corvette.
It's quite the red rocket, all right.
That was my buddy Big George, who had been a Corvette specialist back in New York before he came down here. We stripped the car down to bare fiberglass, put six coats of gel coat on it, six coats of primer, six coats of torch red, and 1.5 gallons of diamond clear. If you look at the car now in the sunshine and spend more than about 30 seconds looking at it, when you look away, everything else has a blue tinge to it.
It's quite a color. That's a lot of work. Jeez.
Yeah. And performance cars, you tend to use up the parts, the brakes, because you're hitting the brakes hard sometimes. And the Corvette Club that I founded here many, many moons ago, they called me Half Shaft Harry, because in the first 2 years I broke the half shafts three times.
What's a half shaft?
Instead of a rear axle, you got independent suspension. So from the differential to the wheel, you have a half shaft.
Oh, each side. I got you.
That's right.
It's not a straight axle side to side. Okay.
That's correct. And one time I was taking a kid next door to work, who turned out to be the local drug dealer 20 years later. Anyhow, he's 16 years old, I guess, sitting in the right side seat. And we were going down the highway here. I was up around 120 miles an hour. And the right side half shaft broke right under his butt. And, of course, that shaft is flailing around. You get blah, 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 blah. The kid was about ready to jump out of the car. But at 120 miles an hour, that's not a good thing to do.
Wow. I had an 03 C5.
I remember it.
And did that have a half shaft also?
Oh, yes.
They all did. Yeah.
Yeah, up until somewhere in the 60s, they had a solid rear axle like a regular old car. But then they went to the independent rear suspension where each rear wheel was individually suspended, which is why they call it independent suspension. But there you have like a U-joint on either side of the differential and a short drive shaft from there to the wheel with a U-joint on it there.
I've seen pictures. I know what you mean now. Yeah.
Right. So it's great for cornering, but when you break one, it gets, especially at 120 miles an hour, it gets doggone exciting. Andy must have thought he was dead.
Well, it drove him to drugs.
Something drove him to drugs. Nah, he was a waiter making a lot of money, and one of the storage shelves with all sorts of food on it fell on him, and it hurt him, hurt his back. And the little creep got going on pain pills, and he just got hooked. You know, you got no strength, for God's sake. You know, a couple of years ago, I fell off my roof, broke my back, knocked myself out, and they gave me pills. I just threw them away.
Harry was so severely injured, no joke, he doesn't even remember talking to me when he was in the hospital.
I have vague recollections of you yelling at the nurse, and that's about all I remember because I was in La La Land. Because not only broke my back, I cracked my head right on the edge of the deck.
That was a different time. No.
Yeah.
I was yelling at the nurse when you went in with the influenza-like illness.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Sorry.
Which wasn't influenza, and they were going to give you the jab of death. And I said, nope, don't even
no,
think
and
about it.
No, I appreciate that. You and my wife both saved my life there. I laid her in the bed for 2 weeks. I didn't eat, drink, pee, or poop.
Right.
I just laid there growing a beard. And my wife called my VA doctor, who said, get his ass to the hospital. And then you started yelling at the nurse, and so I didn't get the remdesivir. But no, you're right. I don't even remember talking to you when I fell off the roof. I was in the hospital 3 days. I don't remember any of it. My wife was there. She said I ate 3 meals a day. I talked to her. I talked to the nurses. I talked to my son. I don't remember a bit of it. And
well,
4 days after they let me out, I was on a plane for Buenos Aires and up into the northern jungles and damn near died up there. The park rangers spent an hour pouring water on me.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Very well.
Hey, God watches out for idiots like me. And it's a good thing because I don't watch out for myself.
It's okay. You're doing something right. You're being protected.
I'm doing the work God sent me here to do, to tell the history of those German warriors.
That's exactly right. Now, you, when you were in there with the illness, not the fall, you said, were you joking or could you actually hear me yelling at the nurse on the phone?
No, I wasn't joking. Hell no.
Oh.
I was laying there half in and half out, and you said, let them give you remdesivir, and I said, what the hell is that? I don't know, and I was half in and half out, and you asked if the doctor was there, and I said, no, the nurse is. So you said, give her the phone. So I handed her my cell phone, and I could hear you yelling at her. And she's, okay, yes, sir, no problem, yes, sir. And
well,
they gave me
monoclonium,
whatever.
Monoclonal antibodies. You can't be nice. You got to be assertive, and I really unloaded on the poor lady. But,
yeah, well, I appreciate it.
But they didn't give you the death shot, so
that's for damn
well
sure.
No.
My wife and I and my son, we did not take the jab. I'm terrified. My daughter did. She's got a really high-paying executive job with a major financial company, and they said, you want to keep this high-buck job? Roll up your sleeve, and she did. This is about 2 years ago.
Well, we'll see. There are a lot of things to be watching and just keep tabs of for right now. So just think positive thoughts. That's the best you can do. It's what they did to people that anyway. Okay, 133% interest rate in Argentina. Milei has laid out that he's brought the economy to a screaming halt. To start it up, to reset everything and start it up again. 133% interest rates, 254% inflation. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a textbook case in an econ class somewhere.
Especially
when he pulls it out of the toilet there and they become self-sufficient again.
I think he will. But with the people behind him, he can do almost anything. All right, what I want you all to do is go to the homepage, look for guests, you know where they are, on the left, and click on Harry Cooper. And when you bring Harry up, you look under his name, and there's a little word there that says gallery. You want to click on the gallery, and we're going to take you on a tour of discovery of Hitler's estate called Inalco, I-N-A-L-C-O, which was a self-sustained 2,700-acre hideaway out in gorgeous, beautiful country, stunningly beautiful. And I think it was, who was it that made that announcement that we found a place for the Führer? Oh, that was...
Dönitz.
It was Grand Admiral Dönitz. And
he said, we have found an impregnable fortress for the Führer. No, an impregnable Shangri-La for the Führer.
That's right, Shangri-La.
And people jumped on the conclusion, oh, it must be Antarctica. Got to be Antarctica. Well, there was stuff going on down there. There still is stuff going on down there. But his fortress was Inalco.
Right. All right, let's go to the top row of our gallery and photo number one. Now,
who put all the naked girls on this gallery?
This shame.
How many of your listeners are racing through the gallery right now?
All right. This is a picture of Harry in an inflatable boat, I guess. Wasn't that a Zodiac kind of a boat?
That's correct. That's when Naval Coca took me there in 2008, and his friend had this Zodiac, and for a certain number of U.S. dollars would take me there and back. Okay, well, they took us there, and that's when I fell through the damn dock and cut my left arm all up. I still got wood in it, scars, whatever. And so that was not at, that was 2008, and when the guy came back, now this was when they took us, I'm sorry, to the research plant, the nuclear research plant.
On the islands, yeah.
Yeah, and when the guy came back to pick us up, I offered it to pay him, and no, he caught a bunch of fish, so he's happy. But yeah, this is buzzing up to Inalco with that Zodiac, and
straight
you can
ahead.
Look at the scenery for, oh my God, well, how gorgeous.
Yeah.
And the lake, the water is crystal clear. I refilled my water bottles from the, and it goes down in some places to 400 meters down, and that's plenty deep, but it's an alpine type lake. Although it's not the Alps, but, it's, and you see in this picture the mountains behind you. The air is crisp and clean. Beautiful place.
And not a communist to be seen in 2008.
No, hardly not a person to be seen.
How did you... Okay, now remember, there's no way to get to this place when it was constructed in the, we figure around 43, 44, they probably began
it. No, it was built at the end of the war. As the war was coming to a close, they built it quickly.
They did. It was a quick job. Okay.
Yeah, it was
Mercedes
so
well done,
of Argentina built.
So beautifully built, I figured it had to take at least a year or so. All right, anyway, when you're approaching it in the boat and you see it, this is legend. This is magic. How did you feel that moment? Do you remember anything special?
Yeah, just the hair on the back of your neck is standing up because you're going to be walking in the footsteps of history. Whether you hate Hitler, love Hitler, or don't give a damn about Hitler, he was here for 10 years, he and his wife. And, of course, there was about 80 people there in the whole complex because there's a farm also connected to it. But, yeah, it's just incredible. And,
bring
people there, they have the same feeling. It's just, we're walking in history.
Off to the left in the forest are a number of other buildings. Big horse barn, residential buildings. There was what appeared to be a command and control center, literally, with a radio antenna, which that building burned down, but everything
That's
else
correct,
is still
but
there.
The base of the radio antenna is still there, and we took pictures of that. That's on my website.
All right, so here we are. We're rolling up on Lake Nahuelhuapé.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a photo of the Admiral. If that's a selfie, it's a pretty good job.
Thank you. That was a selfie. Just hold the phone out and look at the lens and push the button.
Yeah. Who's at the controls there?
That's Nahuel.
The boat? Oh, that's Nahuel.
That's Nahuel. It was his buddy that owned the boat.
I see.
I can't remember the boat owner's name. He's a real nice guy, but that's the only time I ever saw him was that particular day.
Okay, very good. All right, back to number three. Now you're on the shore, and we're looking at the building.
Nobody the manor
there.
House.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Beautiful Bavarian, beautiful building. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, when I got off the airplane in Bariloche, it was almost like getting off the plane in Munich. I mean, the mountains rising up behind you, the architecture of everything there was Bavarian. And and I learned many years later that 85% of the Argentinians have Western European roots. And it was only up until about sometime, I think, don't nail me down.
You're talking
on
about
this,
genetics as well. These are Caucasian European types.
Correct. And it was sometime in the 50s, I think, that the constitution of Argentina was changed. Prior to that time, Argentina would only accept immigrants from Western Europe, primarily Germany, but a whole bunch of Italians as well. And that's in my second book on the Hitler escape, Hitler and the Secret Alliance, which explains how tens of thousands of people escaping the crumbling Reich were able to just move right into Argentina, assimilate, and in the case of the very big names, just disappear.
The
and
deal
in that book,
was so
book,
secretive.
Say again?
The okay, deal was so secretive that J. Edgar Hoover didn't even know Hitler was down there. He had his people looking for him until he was told
right.
to back down, stand down, and cut it out. That's about 1946,
yeah, that was in the middle of 47, I believe.
47?
Mm. Yeah. Because by then, they did have knowledge of where he was. We've got a bunch of FBI files showing exactly where he was. But my deduction here was that there was a quid pro quo, Operation Paperclip. We got thousands and thousands of German scientists. And so I think that was the quid pro quo. You leave Hitler alone, and he's
and
not going to bother
of
anybody.
People.
And in return, we'll give you all our technology, which was incredible.
It was a hell of a deal for both sides. And I think there was some kind
right.
of an, call it a treaty, whatever you want. But there was an agreement made, and we think that has been renewed on a fairly regular basis ever since
right.
it was originally signed, which would have been probably 45, 46 at the
something
latest.
Something like that. Well, yeah. there was a lot going on the last days of the war that we're not told about. One of our members, a guy named Jim Johnson, who runs the hangar that maintains Air Force One, Air Force Two, and all those aircraft, his mother had a neighbor or whatever down there in, the name escapes me, but she saw three Fiesler Storches come in and land, and they were met by a caravan of cars, and they drove right past her. She was standing at the side of the road, literally 1 meter away, and she saw Hitler in the back seat of the car, one of the cars. And this was after the suicide. And then our mutual friend, who shall go nameless, showed me a place in Salzburg, and he said that the fighting was still going on around Salzburg after the surrender because Hitler and some other big guys were there meeting with some of the Allies to work out some of the plans for Hitler's escape. And he showed me where the entrance to the bunker tunnel system was, where these meetings were going on. And the city of Salzburg is now using them for truck maintenance, the immediately front end of these things, but they go on for miles underground. And so he showed me where it was, right in the middle of Salzburg. And you look inside, and yep, there's trucks sitting there, but then you see the tunnel going on way down below that. So there's one of them signs that, Eingang verboten, which means shark hunters welcome here. And I started walking in, and some worker come running out yelling and screaming at me in German. Well, I speak German. I know what he was saying, but, of course, when it's in my best interest, I don't speak German. I said, well, howdy, buddy. What are you trying to tell me here? Mm-hmm. And I kept walking further in, taking pictures, until finally he stood in front of me and pointed his hand towards where I came in. A house. Okay, I understand that. So I went outside, and our friend is standing out there laughing his buns off. But that's, there's a lot of stuff that went on after the surrender that we're not taught about. And we have another map that Pizarro gave me. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of the city down there. It was surrounded by some of the best Waffen-SS troops. They were the toughest fighters of the war. And they were holding off the Red Army. And there was an airfield there. And there were several JU 290s and some FW200s. And I think, I'd have to look at the map again, chart, but I think it showed the FW, or the JU390 V2. And right in the middle, there's a little picture of a bell, and it says Die Glache. So that's where they were trying to get the Nazi bell out.
This is a photograph, Harry?
No. It's a hand-drawn chart.
Drawing. Okay.
Yeah. And I've got I've posted it before. If you need it, let me know, and I'll send it back to you.
Yeah, send it
over. So there was so much going on after the surrender. May 8th, Germany surrenders, war's over, Nazis are dead, the boys can come home. Actually, they just sent them home for a couple of days and then off to the Pacific. But, that's the end of World War II on the European side. No, it was not. A lot of stuff under the covers.
Yeah, don't forget also that I have, I think the fellow's passed on now, but one of his best friends during the war was a P-51 pilot, and mm-hmm. he had, he was an ace, but back then I think 6 shoot-downs made you an ace, something like that. I'm not degrading anybody.
5 kills made you an ace.
5, okay. Anyway, yeah. He, at the end of the war, his squadron, rather than sent home, no, they were kept there and retrained on flying DC-4 long-range transports. DC Donald Douglas aircraft, DC-4s, long range, 4-engine transport. Why? Well, my friend told me that his friend said that we were flying from Europe to Argentina, Germans, cargo, all kinds of things, nonstop. Mm-hmm. We were not allowed to look in the back of the plane. We could see people going up the ramp to get in there, and we were given our orders flying. I think they went to Spain, then to the Canaries, then jumped across and on into Argentina. Anyway, mm-hmm. we were flying Germans of high rank in the administration and military to freedom and anonymity in Argentina. That's a fact.
I just came across a photo of, I can't remember the general's name, but it was a very, very high-ranking Luftwaffe general sitting in one of these cargo planes reading Yank magazine on his way to South America.
Oh, that's a great picture. Well, send that too. All right, let's get back to our pictures. We're looking at number 4 up next. Just Harry's moving toward the house. You see a couple of fold-up lawn chairs there. There was a caretaker there at the house.
Right.
And actually the house had been used, I guess, for a couple of years by some film school where they had, 8 or 10 or 15 film school students would go down there for a couple of weeks. It didn't sit entirely vacant since its absentee status was achieved around 1955 when Hitler left. Certainly the fall of the Argentine government and his protector.
That was the September 55 coup.
Yeah. So anyhow, we're moving up there, and let's go to number 5. Take a look at that one. All right. You see another shot. That's a wild deer there on the right, isn't it? Okay.
It's Sasquatch.
All right. You see the front of the house, beautiful stonework at the bottom, deck up on the right, possibly the master bedroom up on the right above. This is all heavy timber work. Mm-hmm. Off to the left is a guest quarters, apparently. In the center, to the left of the shrub, is the great room. And off to the right appears to have been Hitler's major working office. It was a big room, certainly big enough to have meetings of people and so forth. And in the middle would be the entry to it. So that's just the front side.
Yeah, that's one of the entrances. There are two entrances. Entrances. On the other side, the part sticking out, on the left side of that, there's a door also. That's the one when we were there this time, 2008. I picked that lock and went in.
Got it. All right, next picture, number 6, is a view of the back of the house. And if you
up a little hill.
Up a little hill in the back. Look carefully, you'll see plastic has been stapled to the roof or nailed down with boards. It was leaking. This is 2008. Mm-hmm. The roof was mm-hmm. leaking. The water was coming in. And it just kept coming in year after year. And that was not good. Okay.
Let me add a little bit here. You see that structure on the right, that addition to the house? You could not get into that from the main house. You had to go outside and up that staircase. It's a separate standalone, although it's attached.
Mm-hmm.
That was guest quarters, I think.
Right. Number seven, another view of the back, moving around to the left more and looking out at the lake, which is much bigger than what you see there. I mean, it's like
this is just a finger of that lake.
Right. And that finger was guarded on both sides where it began to narrow and go up into the inlet where this home and property are located. And again, look at the roof, look at all the plastic up there trying to stop the water from coming in. It's the original roof and the timber on the sides, you can see all made from local wood right there. They made it all.
Mm-hmm.
And the craftsmanship inside. Well, you'll see more pictures ahead. Extraordinary. Beautiful, beautiful. All right, on next year, pictures number eight of the Cooper breaking and entering once again.
Yeah, that's the door I was telling you about, just to the left of that extension of the house.
Right.
Nice. It ain't called breaking and entering when you pick the lock carefully.
I didn't know the Spanish for it, so I just had to go with what I knew. Number nine. That's an older picture of the house in better days.
Mm-hmm.
You notice there was a big, beautiful lawn in front. Totally manicured. The views from inside the house, we'll show you some, were just gorgeous. And again, you'll see the doorway on the left where Harry went in is sort of right dead center. And then the great room is just to the right of that. And the office room, we think, is on the end down there below the master bedroom and a deck to walk out on and enjoy the really unprecedented beauty of that location.
Right. You'll remember that we showed, in one of our previous shows, we showed diagrams in which our agent Nemo showed what each room was and what it was used for and the size, etc.
Got it. Okay, let's go inside the house. We have a few minutes left here. That's picture number 10. Now that's Cooper inside the house, looking from the front toward the rear of the property. And to the left, you can't quite see it. It's a great big fireplace. And if you look carefully, on the left, you'll see the back of a leather chair, big armchair. That's what that black is. Across from that, in front of that, is a brass and glass-topped table. And then there are two green leather sitting chairs. And then to the right is a big sofa. Not sure about the vintage of the sofa. That could have been in there in the 40s. It's a 40s, 50s kind of vintage. But look at the floor again. Beautiful woodwork on the floor. Wooden dowels used where all the joints were. And it's just extraordinary.
Yeah, the floorboards are a good 2 or 3 inches thick. Probably more like 4 and 6. Solid.
Yeah. So the caretaker there, a couple of flowers and stuff, but that black chair has quite a story. That's where the man of the house would sit, looking across at the two green chairs where visitors, and there were a lot of visitors, would sit, and then the coffee table in between, beautiful golden brass. It's all tarnished there. And then to the right, he'd look and see the other guests and so forth. And that's primarily how it worked.
And through
very,
those windows
nice.
On the far side, behind that is the hill going up. And behind
correct.
Your
that's
back where I'm standing is the lake.
Yep. That's your perspective. Okay, next picture, number 11. That's a reverse view. And you can see the two green chairs right there, the leather chairs, facing the gentleman of the house, his black leather chair, big armchair, and then you can see the glass top of the brass table and the sofa on the left. On the right, there's a wooden bench seat next to the fireplace. If somebody wanted to sit near the fire, there's a piece of steel on the floor to keep sparks and embers from messing up the woodwork, and a big mantle above it. Now, we'll show you another picture out the windows where it's not overexposed, and you can get an idea of the majesty of the views there. That's number 11. Okay, number 12 is I made a close-up of the black leather armchair. You can see it right there. It's got a red blanket on it. And then there's a little bit of the brass and glass coffee table. And then behind that is another table. That table is right next to the view window. That is an oak table. We call it the breakfast table, if you will. Probably where many things happened. Casual. They weren't formal. They were eating breakfast, lunch. They probably had meals there all the time. If you look carefully on that picture of that table, that oak table, it's a little bit sagged in the middle. It's got two leaves. And then to the right of it is an all-wooden Bavarian-style chair. And when I saw that with the enlargement, I said, that's amazing. So that's
history.
That's real history. And all that was there. It's old. It's old, old. When you were there in 2008, it had been there since 1955. Easy. Old. Sitting in the sun and slowly wilting, as it were. And that big black armchair is right there on the left. All right, much more ahead. So please stay tuned. We'll take a little break. Come right back with Admiral Cooper as we walk through history at Hitler's estate in Alco in Patagonia.